The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
It's time once again to be flabbergasted by the rolling tongue, the juggling of words, thoughts, and phrases, like a Spaniard on a tightrope. Here is the one, the only, the man of 2 hours, Frank Cottolo.
The Hallelujah, 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 Hallelujah. Trail.
Okay, here we go.
Listening to Frank Cottolo.
I worked as an accountant for 2 years in Chicago. I had got a degree in accounting, went into the Army during the Korean War. Remember that one? no benefits. And I have held close to 30 separate accounting jobs in 2 years, which is like 3 weeks at each place, you know. I found one thing is true, that they always put you through an orientation program. You spend 1 week learning all the problems you're going to have to face in this new job. But invariably, after the week in orientation, the first problem you run into your first day on the job was never covered in any of the sessions. Now, with this kind of prologue, this may seem kind of a jump. My favorite movie is King Kong, the monster movie. This is the greatest monster movie ever made, and the biggest scene, of course, the one you all remember from King Kong, is when King Kong climbs the outside of the Empire State Building. All right, now putting these two thoughts together. This is the night that King Kong climbs the outside of the Empire State Building. It's also the first night on the job for a new guard. See, this is his first night on the job. He's gone through a week's orientation on the problems he's going to face, and it happens to be the night that King Kong climbs the outside of the Empire State Building. Hello, Mr. Nelson. Yes, this is Sam Hennessy, the new guard. Yeah, sir, I hate to bother you at home like this on my first night, but see, something's come up, sir, and it's not covered in the guard's manual. Yeah, I looked in the index. Yes, sir. I looked under unauthorized personnel and people without passes and apes and apes' toes. Apes and apes' toes. Yes, sir. There's an ape's toe sticking through the window, sir. Well, see, this isn't your standard ape, sir. I mean, he's between 18 and 19 stories high, depending on whether there's a 13th floor or not. Sir, I'm sure there's a rule against apes shaking the building. There is, yes. So I yelled at his feet, you know. I said, a shoe ape, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to leave, sir. And I know how you like the new men to think on their feet, sir. So I went to the broom class, and I got out a broom without signing out a requisition on it. I will tomorrow, yes, sir. And I started hitting him on the toes with it, you see. But it didn't seem to bother him too much. See, there are these planes, sir, and they're flying around him, and they're shooting at him, you know, and they only seem to be bothering him a little bit, so I figured I wasn't doing too much good with a broom.
Did I try swatting him in the face with it? Well, I was going to take the elevator up to his head, sir. See, but my jurisdiction only extends to his navel. Yeah. You don't care what I do. Just get the ape off the building. This may complicate things a little. He's carrying a woman in his hand, sir. I don't think she works in the building. No, sir. Well, see, as he passed by my floor, she had this kind of negligee on, you know. So I doubt very much if she was one of the cleaning women, you know. Well, sir, the first thing I did, I filled out a report on it. Well, I don't want to give the building a bad name either, sir, you know, but... Well, I doubt very much if we can cover it up, sir. The planes are shooting at them, you know, and... people are going to come to work tomorrow morning, and some of them are going to notice the ape in the street, you know, and... And the broken window, you know, and they'll start putting two and two together. I think we're safe on that score, sir. I doubt very much if he signed the book downstairs. You don't care what I do, just get the ape off the building. Well, I came up with one idea, sir, but I'm not supposed to leave my post. Well, I thought maybe I could smear the Chrysler building with bananas.
Before you do another thing, welcome. I am the godfather of internet radio, the bard of broadcasting, and I invite you in for special things. Wake up. It's night, and we take you down the Hallelujah Trail once again. My name is Frank Cotolo, the man whose name adorns the title of the show. Stay with us. This is going... Take out your notebooks. Take notes on this one. Dr. David Reith is here, and so am I, and so are you. So, maybe King Kong will stop in. In. You're already in. From ice cap to ice cap, from Hamlet to city, from Othello and into every bordello, it is a Thursday evening. It's the night that has more than 1,000 eyes. My name is Frank Cotolo. I'm here at Don't Style Show. This is Cotolo Chronicles, and we are a chronicling. Now, a lot of you do not know who you just heard speaking, doing a little comedy bit there in our opening montage, which is really less of a montage than the definition demands. But that was a guy named Bob Newhart. And you might know him from about a billion other things, I'm sure. Young kids, probably you young guys, you millennials probably only know him from Big Bang Theory. And then this guy goes back generations. And that was, his younger years. And I thought that was a fascinating little routine because of, and I'm not going to talk about this a lot, but I guess everyone's talking about it, not everyone, but a lot of people, and that is the JFK files, whatever that is. They got a big file cabinet with all these things in it that nobody ever looked and saw until when they were put away. I don't understand how those things happened, but they were released, and all the conspiracy people are looking around and wondering if they're going to find out stuff, you know, about the assassination, which of course over the years, over the decades, has been a matter of discussion and controversy because so many people wanted to believe certain things. And this comes into play in terms of what we're going to talk about with Dr. David Reese on this show, but it also had something to do with that comedy routine, because I was thinking about what I thought, because everyone thinks about what they think. If you're old enough to remember the Kennedy assassination, was it 53 years ago as we're recording the show? And I'm thinking to myself how as time went on, I never was a conspiracy theorist guy. I always thought that there was such thing as a magic bullet, the bullet that, and I also thought that Lee Harvey Oswald did it, because I think that, and I know this can happen. I know that it's, and there's more evidence for this, because there's no evidence for all the conspiracies. The evidence, no matter what Mark Trail said, was that his name? Mark Trail? Boy, that guy who did all those Kennedy conspiracies. He kind of started it back in the old days when the Warren Commission was trying to figure out who killed Kennedy. And they had that, you know, it was very strange. But anyway, the idea that any scheme of events can happen, and that the unlikelihood of it is very likely. So when everything goes right, everything went right for this guy. How many things go wrong that this one thing went right? I'm talking about Lee Harvey Oswald, who shoots the president in a moving vehicle. The president was in a moving vehicle, and he's on in a window, a couple of many stories up, and he does happen to shoot and kill him and injure someone else. So I mean, all this stuff comes up, and this is a strange time for this stuff to come up, because these people feel about these things, it comes into what we're going to talk about. Feelings define reality, and every time I read that. And one of Dr. David's, I'm going to just call him Dr. David. I got to call him Dr. first. I am with professionals. I feel like they deserve the respect of their title. They earn their title, you know, just like I'm the Bard of Broadcasting. What do you think? I didn't earn that? You think I just made it up? So I thought that was funny that Bob Newhart, one of his original routines was about a guy who goes through all the stuff you need to know about this job. And that's the one night that he starts is the one night. It just so happens. That's the night that King Kong decides to climb up the Empire State Building. And I think that's exactly what went on. So there's all that and the feeling and we'll talk about it more with somebody who knows really a lot about it. In the meantime, let me tell you something else. If you're listening live if you're listening lifelike, I don't know. Because, if you're listening live, on this Thursday, October 26th, 2017, Y2K plus 17, this is the night where I am followed after it's been a long time. It seems like only yesterday, but, Tom Savino, Savino Veritas will be on at the end of this show. So he's a brand new season. We'll call it a brand new season. Tom, of course, who's back. You don't know, of course, or you don't know what happened, but he was taken ill. He's back, and I think he's better than ever. I saw him the other night, and he looks terrific. And he's going to be this is political satire. It's great stuff. No matter what side of any aisle you might be living, no matter what you think, what you feel, or who you are in this world, Savino Veritas is for you. And coming up in future weeks, he'll be on the show. I'll be on the show. And you could still go get the groundbreaking digital versions of Dead Air, which was the show Tom and I did. Well, it's the syndicated version of a show we did back in the, the 70s.
Ha! Ooh! Wow!
That's at juicedtalk.com, where there are also archives of this show, archives of the Artist D show, archives of Velvet Steel show, archives of Savino Veritas. So all that goes on. I'll cross this thing out here now. Before we get to Dr. David R., Dr. D.R. Hey, Dr. D.R. His doctor is D.R., and he's D.R.D.R. I just realized that. Well, because the things you just realize, it's not like you sit around and think of these things. Although some people do. That's how some people construct their thoughts, but not me. It's not me. What else? Look, the other things you know about, you could go get the books where you know I got the books. The books are the written and all that stuff. You know to, you know where to go on the internet to find out various things and see me on Facebook or 148.ca/Frank. Foreculture.com, the series, the rocket science columns. Are being greatly received. Is that greatly received? Warmly received? They're getting a lot of traffic, and I'm appreciative of everyone who reads them. They're a little different in their scheme, in their rhythm, in their device, and you'll enjoy it. A lot of people seem to be enjoying it, so that's good. Maybe you learn something, maybe you don't. That's why you should have your Cthulhu Chronicles notebook with you, especially tonight, because there's so much that I learn from people like him, and I'm going to have the other doctors, whether they be, I don't know, a physical doctor? I don't know. I mean, a physical, of course, they're all live and in the flesh. I mean, I don't know if we've ever had a physician, I think that would be it. Do we have a physician? I don't know, maybe. Dr. Woldar, I got to get in touch with him, Professor Woldar. He's in the Congressional Record, for God's sake. And Dr. Popoli, that was a pause to find that name. My brain working as it does and as it always has right here. Just a couple of doctors there. Dr. Karen Wyatt. I got to get Dr. Karen Wyatt on. I promised her and I promised you. So we talk about everything that has to do with life. We talk about brains. We talk about stuff. And next week, I had a couple of things. I don't plan. You know that. There's a couple of things I was going to do, not going to do. And we'll see what happens. And to find out what happens, when it happens, I stream my news role. What do they call that on Facebook? The scroll, the thing in the scroll, my feed. That's it, my feed. He's off his feed. The only other thing I want to say today, because I was a couple of weeks ago complaining, as I do, about a lot of these things when it comes to pop culture and the English language. And I was talking about the rampant use of the word legend when it came to the unfortunate demise of pop culture figures. And when Tom Petty died, he immediately earned the title legend. And, I talked about this even before Tom Petty died. The other guy died, the Allman guy died. I don't remember his first name. The Allman guy died and he was legendary. And, what I wanted to say was this, disheartened, because of various reasons and connections in my life. But Antoine Fats Domino, not a lot of people know his first name is Antoine. Fats Domino died 89. That's pretty darn good. 89 is pretty good. I if you're in pretty decent shape, especially he was in good shape. So I don't know what happened to him. I don't have a coroner's report. But 89, I know that he was playing. This is one of the guys, a staple of the original whole world of rock and roll. Okay. Fats Domino. a Native American. Well, he's a Native American. He's born in America. You know, an African American guy who's like, you know, he's kicking out the jams of all the problems, with color and everything at that time. You know, Chuck Berry was there too, in those days. All these guys, you know, especially these black guys like, Fats, Domino. And he has, hits, and he's on shows, he's on the American Bandstand, and he travels all around, and in his later years, in the last like 20 years of his life, he's still playing in little clubs in Louisiana, and, you know, he's in, and nobody talks of him, nobody covers anything about where is Fats Domino. Most people think he's already dead. And today, when everybody got onto their social media, not everybody, So many people on social media don't even know Fats Domino. But, all the RIP Fats Domino, they're coming up with the pictures and of course the GIFs and the JPEGs and everything that, is made, so that people can post. People don't know him, they just like him or they heard of him. A lot of people who like from my generation and a generation before, not many from the generation after, maybe the generation after the baby boomers. But nobody uses the word legend. No one said the legendary Fats Domino. They stopped using it. Now you're saying like, well, isn't that good, Frank? Isn't that good? It just seems to me that it proves my case about using legend, the very word, the very definition for someone like Tom Petty, legend. And yet, when it comes to rock and roll, maybe those guys in the beginning have a bit more of the, of what it takes to define legend than some of the, most of the guys. Certainly more than, I'm not trying to put down, I'm sorry guys die. I don't want to die. I don't want them to die. I don't care what they do or where they go or what they did. And I'm not, you know, it's not that. It's just that we've raped this word. You made it into nothing. Now everybody's a legend. And that's what I was complaining about. And then I got a little annoyed and it came up again today because there was Fats Domino. And nobody said the legendary Fats Domino. The one time it would make some kind of sense because there are stories and I know because as working with Wolfman Jack and Wolfman Jack, who would have been 79, and Fats Domino, these guys were, they had a rapport, and I wrote things about Fats Domino that were not true, but they were funny, and that makes you a legend, a character, become a character in you, and there's stories about you that don't exist because you're just you're so embedded in the fiber of something, in this case pop culture, in this case rock and roll, you know, and then what? Nothing. They just show, I'm telling I don't know how many people that his name is Antoine. It'll always be Antoine. Antoine Fats Domino. And those are the days when you could say things like, let's call him Fats, you know? How many Fats do you know of in pop culture? I know Minnesota Fats, the very famous, hustler pool player, Minnesota Fats. I don't know what his last name. It wasn't Fats. Fats Waller, who was a honky-tonk jazz, I don't know, what would you call that? Was that jazz or vaudeville piano player in the 20s or whatever? Fats. So there's three Fats I know. I know of those three Fats. Domino I knew, but Fats, Domino, Fats, Waller, and Minnesota Fats. And each one of these guys has a something in their lives, or one or two or three things in their lives that allow their careers to earn some, if not all, of the definition of legend or being legendary. Okay, so there it is. The language and the whole lexicon of pop culture is just going crazy. And I don't know whose fault that might be, but I'm here to clear up some of that stuff because it bothers me.
And my name is Frank Cotolo, the mayor's name adorns the title of the show. And that's what bothers me. And you know, because you come here and hear those kind of things. So wake up, it's night. It's what they tell you. I'll tell you fat stories someday, okay? I'll tell all sorts of stories someday. Replenish your precious bodily fluids as we talk. We're going to talk. I'm going to call them any second now. And I got my coffee. It's, as usual, black as hell, strong as death, sweet as love. Yes, I have started putting some sugar back into it. Sometimes honey, sometimes sugar, but, you know, not a lot. It's not bitter as a fried grasshopper. Like, so what's that with my voice? What do you think? I don't even sound like me when I was talking over the theme. Well, in any event, in all events, and certainly in this event, I am the third man, and I'm the guy, and we're going to get into this thing. I don't see any reason why we should wait any longer. I think we should get Dr. Reese. See, there I go again, huh? Let me call him now. Does that work? I'm calling Dr. Reese. Oh, I'm sorry. Where is it? Hey, how come this... Wait, call Skype. Yeah. There you go. That was weird. Skype is always changing some way or another. Skype is changing. Dr. DRDR?
That's me. You got me here.
Good. Because you're the whole show here. DRDR. I'm going to tell everybody, you're talking to us tonight from, everybody will know this without me even saying it, my favorite city and a city I hope someday to retire and live again.
San Diego.
What do you like about San Diego? Oh, don't you? I'm saying that like.
No, the weather. It's nice here. Although I head to New York City tomorrow night, but I'm here today.
Well, it's going to be a little rainy, I hear, but.
Yeah, it was only 104 here yesterday.
I heard that there were really worse. There was really, were the winds coming in, or was that all accumulated from the fires?
No, it was all Santa Ana blowing in from the desert. It was in the 90 today, but then it cools off a bit tomorrow.
I heard it was, one day it was like 104 there.
Yep. Yesterday morning I got in the car and it was 104.
I remember those days. I used to live right by the beach and that was just great.
Right. Actually, when I got into Del Mar, it was 94. But I'm about 3 miles inland from that. It was 104.
I lived in Leucadia. You know where Leucadia?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody
just a few miles away. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So you know, cause you've done Del Mar well, I'm glad. I wish you a safe trip and, thank you for coming on again.
Certainly.
It's been a while. I don't know where I saw it again, but as I wrote to you when I said, hey, I'd like you on the show, I just thought this was a wonderful time to get more deeply into or just converse about feelings. Feelings describe?
Yeah, just how feelings define reality.
Define.
What I thought, if it's okay with you, I mean, I don't want to make it real political. But I could address it a little bit to the politics of the day, but also to racing and gambling.
Good. The idea of doing it to the politics of today, is good because I was just talking about, the JFK files being released.
Right.
And of course, from the very beginning, and you're like, we were there. We weren't there. I mean,
I remember.
We were alive. The people refuse, so many people refuse to believe, that it was even possible, that one man could do that under those circumstances. And I thought that, didn't that kind of fit into, people get, well, you remember Mark Lane? Was that his name? Mark Lane?
Oh yeah, Mark Lane from, Dallas. No, not Dallas. Louisiana, wasn't he from?
Yeah.
I was New called, Orleans, yeah.
I was called the Mark Trail before, that was a comic strip. I don't know why. My names get all mixed up. But, Mark, is that age? I don't know. I don't think so.
No,
it's not. Mark Lane, he really got it rolling and people got all excited about, and conspiracy, those kind of conspiracies began. I know conspiracies go way back far, further than that. But,
right.
But it does fit into today's culture because of you know, what, the new ways of communication and everything? And
The social media has a lot to do with it, and the immediate responses that everybody expects and gives doesn't really give you time to think things through.
And everyone, and this is the other thing I think that's great about it, everyone, whether they know it or not, is affected by it. So I thought you could talk about it more, define it more, and then we could go into other stuff because you know all about this stuff.
I won't use any clinical language, but if I get too technical, just call me out.
I'm going to copy it down if you get technical. I'm going to learn it.
I'll just go into a little description, then we can go wherever we go with it.
Go. Let's start. Feelings, okay. Describe, define reality to people.
Right. Go. Right. You want me to just get going?
Yeah, get going.
Okay, well. Basically, you know, if you really look at it from where we come from, you know, basically as infants, you know, we were thinking before we had language. Now, as an adult, it's hard to reconceptualize how to think without words, but obviously for a couple years we were doing it. So what really defined our thoughts initially were more sensations and feelings. And some of that carries through with all of us throughout life. But hopefully, as you mature and as you learn, you temper defining reality by sensations and feelings with facts, data, consistency, and logic, the things we try to value. But the old tendency to basically think of things based on how you feel and define reality that way still stays with all of us to some extent. And like advertising of any type, whether it be, you know, a commercial for a product or politics or anything, plays on that. It tries to get you to feel rather than to think. Because if you think, you're going to buy the product that's either best or least expensive or most efficient. But if you feel, you're going to buy what looks best or sounds best or what your favorite spokesman endorses. So this is a ubiquitous part of our policy, of our life, basically, and of media. And the more we have social media, immediate response, things are moving so quickly, the less time we have to sort of sit back and think, and the more time we react by feelings.
So let's go to what is Freud says, what is the up until the age 5, is that a good, where are we getting all this stuff that is going to pop up later and turn into defining reality? Give us an example.
The basis of it is really in the first couple of years before we have language, but we're still relying on it largely until about 5. And that's when more, you know, if all goes well and you have the intellectual capabilities and the teaching, you start bringing logic and actual thought process into it.
So I had the right age.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And then we go through the whole thing again during adolescence, mm-hmm. where you again sort of return to doing things more based on feelings, but then hopefully as you come out of adolescence, somewhere in the late 20s or so, you start bringing logic back into it.
Does that have to do with, would that happen without education? Or would, in other words, if there was an education and other kinds of stimuli, would you live your life like an ape? Isn't that what apes do?
Well, actually, even apes use a form of logic, even though it's nonverbal, mm-hmm. as far as we know. But even without education, people still learn logical ideas and mm-hmm. thoughts. So education surely helps mm-hmm. and fosters it and moves you in a different direction. But the natural progression is towards a more logical thought, even though we never totally lose the old way of thinking.
And we're attacked viscerally. If we are, then we're going to have certain feelings. Did I just interrupt your stream of thought?
No, not at all.
So if you have if everything goes right, as you said, even if everything goes right. Until 5 or before you're speaking or what have you, you're going to be handed, you're going to get experience that is going to push a button right? And you're going to relate some feeling.
Right.
To your atmosphere and your people and your relationships, everything. It's just going
to
happen.
To everything. Right. And then, you know, if things go well, when you realize that's happening, and then you moderate it based on facts and logic and say, oh, well, I feel that way, but maybe that's not really the reality, or maybe that's not the best thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people get stuck there, and I won't mention names, but there's
some history is filled
people
with
people right now, and history is filled with them, never get past that. And not only do they still rely on emotions, but it's their emotional need at the moment. You know, if I feel this is good for me now, then it must be real.
Okay, now let's define real in this case, because what is happening is the person who's saying that or is using that as a in behavior, is saying, is believing a certain thing.
Actually believes it to be true. Yeah, if this serves my need, it must be true. That by definition makes it true.
Does that have two sides? If something bad happens to you. Know, right? So you could build up defenses based on that, or?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Or if something's bad, it can't be true. You know, if it doesn't serve my needs. Now, most of us hopefully can moderate that. And let me take it out of the political a second.
Yeah.
Into the sports realm.
Okay. Go ahead.
And an area that I'm not sure. Well, I think you have some experience with gambling.
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Yes. Take it into that.
Okay. You're at the track, okay, and you say, well, I think this horse looks good. Now, as a experienced handicapper, you've looked at statistics, you know about the jockey, you know about the conditions of the race, you know about the competition, and there's some very specific analysis that goes into it. There may also be an sort of intuitive part where you can't really put numbers to it, but it is based on a knowledge that you have, having maybe seen the horse a number of times or seen some competition. So you can say it's irrational, but it's not necessarily, well, you know, he raced his last quarter in so many seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's the other part of, you know, I just feel this horse is going to win with no rhyme or reason. And if you make a bet based on that, you know what's going to happen in the long run.
Sure. Sure, feeling right. Well, you know, I've told this, we probably have, but we never talked about this before, but I've talked about this in the past on the show based on not even talking about gambling, but about being able to study any particular subject. And you'll know this, you'll know this too. And speaking of horse racing, you know of James Quinn? Have you ever heard of James Quinn?
Sounds familiar, but I can't.
Okay, back in the '80s, and he's written a bunch of books, and he's a great gambler, a wonderful guy.
Yeah.
You know, and he's gave a talk once at a class I was giving, and he defined an expert in any field this way.
Yeah.
And this is where this comes into play, what you're talking about. He said,
yeah,
an expert must have, number one, knowledge. You must know. You must know the things about your field, whatever they are, whether they're, you know, you must know, whatever they are. Okay. And then the other thing, number two, is experience. You have to have been in the field.
Right.
So that you know this, that you, now you take the knowledge and the experience.
Yeah.
All right. But the experience comes from learning, and you learn more, so your knowledge grows and stuff like that. Now, the number three thing, very few people guess when you tell them, if I tell them this, and I'm the very, I don't know anybody who guessed it.
Yeah.
The third thing is intuition.
Right.
And what you're talking about, and again, I'm mentioning this because it is in league with the other things. If you just go by intuition, Lord knows where you'll wind up, right?
Right. And you have to distinguish between intuition that is based on what I would call nonverbal knowledge. You know, things that you're aware of that really are based in reality and facts, but not necessarily statistical, but it really has a basis in experience.
And
as
knowledge.
As opposed to just a feeling like, well, I've lost my three bets, so I really ought to triple up how much I bet now because I'm due.
That's yeah, the old you're due. That, people do that.
That's just a feeling, and that's going to drive you, you know, to a loss.
And even but people who don't difference. Take people, even people yeah. don't take risks, will do that in their life. They'll say, "Lenny, I've done this again and again, but I'm due. It's got like it's got to happen, right?
It's got to happen because I what? Feel it, or I need it, or you know, I'm down to my last whatever. So this one has to come in." And yeah, we can talk about it in terms of betting at the track, but it really has to do with a lot of things yes. in life, and including in relationships.
Yes.
You know, I mean, well, this has happened so many times, so this time it will be different because it has to be. Well, no, maybe you want it to be, but it doesn't have to be at all unless there's really good basis for that.
This all falls into mathematics too, right? This falls into probability, objective probability, and subjective right. probability, and things right. that can happen. Because a bet, yeah. I mean, odds are only the bet that something will or won't happen.
Right, right. right.
Because and, you don't you know the outcome.
Sure, like if you look at hard mathematics, like yeah, 2 + 2 = 4, there's only one answer,
yeah.
you know, and you're
yeah.
right or wrong. Mm-hmm. But once you get into more complex issues, you know, you may make a little bit of an error or you may slip up. So even if you're using logic, it's not perfect. Or like if you talk about a race or something like that, things may happen that are unpredictable. So all the statistics in the world aren't going to necessarily give you a definite answer. But on the other hand, if you just go by, this horse looks good with a red jockey on him,
right.
you know, that's not using any real information that has any relevance to the task at hand.
Yeah, like a guy, how about if we put this to relationships, could this have, all of this could have something to do with a various attraction that a man has to a woman, or a man has to a man, or a woman has to a woman, you know, whatever.
Right,
and
right.
And someone once said to me, it was a close friend, because only close friends could say things like this. Who would say, I just introduced him to this girl I was going with, right? Way back.
Yeah.
And he goes,
yeah.
he says to me, he just turns to me, do you realize it's the same girl all the time?
Right.
And I'm
right.
like, what do you mean? And I don't see it, right?
Like,
you're
right.
What do you mean?
Yeah, that's the difference between the terms I'd use would be infatuation and a real relationship. And infatuation is a healthy initial part of a relationship.
Yeah, but it's directed. It was directed towards something I couldn't see that was
right.
very familiar.
Right.
But so the feeling was there.
Yeah, it's based on something you want but isn't necessarily there.
Yeah.
And then hopefully both people in the relationship say, well, now I have to deal with who the real person is, pluses and minuses, and weigh it out. And,
yeah.
you know, and the infatuation wanes, but hopefully there's something left.
Mm-hmm.
If you stay expecting the infatuation, you know, you're going to just exchange partners every dance.
It's crazy. We're all crazy, right?
But we all come from a part, from a place where we didn't have words, we didn't have logic. So yeah, we all come from a place where we were thinking in strange ways, and then we have to learn how to deal with the reality of life, which in itself is not secure or obvious or always based on clear linear statistics.
And then, and even then, it heavily depends upon the culture in which you're living, right? Because that's gonna,
absolutely,
that's gonna be completely
absolutely.
Different. In so
right.
many way, in so many ways. But still, we're all starting with a blank, sheet, a blank slate, and.
Right.
That's the thing. What, knowing this, being a father of two kids and having two kids grow up and dealing with them, being very close to them, I was always like, geez, if I do this, you know,
yeah.
I mean, you know, you're always like, what am I going to do? If I do this, I got to be myself, but I got to do this. And yet I have to teach, and then I have to, you know, that's really some juggling balls there.
Definitely. As well as recognizing that kids at different stages don't really have the capacity to, most kids won't have the capacity to respond to being told, you know, that's not really logical.
Mm-hmm.
Because to them, it makes perfect sense. And some of those kids grow up to be congressmen or senators or whatever and are still functioning that way.
Mm-hmm.
But realistically, you know, you try to take a 14-year-old and talk sense to them, it's not going to make any sense to mm-hmm. them. So you have to just plant seeds and guide them, hope they don't get into too much trouble before they realize that they have to take reality into logical consideration.
you know, for some of our listeners who don't know, and I guess I wasn't too clear about this. I was in the blog and everything that DRDR here is a psychiatrist and has worked with in many different fields that you've worked. All it's one of the great things about guys like you is that you see the familiar behavior, the familiar sparks of behavior and influences in any field, right? I mean, no matter what happens, you just see it happens. Like, and people wouldn't think that.
Right. No, in 30 odd years, I won't say how many, in my profession, you know, and working with everyone from, you know, just regular outpatient, basically normal people who are dealing with problems to severely psychotic people, working with athletes, even working in state hospitals, working with politicians. You know, there ain't much I haven't seen.
And children, and of course, children also, because you have an adolescent.
Yeah, I mean, I don't do child psychiatry, but I've worked with adolescents. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's not much I haven't seen, and people function at all different levels. And if you look at our society as a whole, honestly, we're functioning on about a 14-year-old level emotionally.
Wow. That's...
You know, and it's probably gone down over the last couple of years. And I don't care whether you're on the right or left or middle or up or down. You know, maybe we were at one point reached 16, 17. And yeah, there's some very good, bright people who were way above that. But as a society, you know, we've never gotten beyond late adolescence. And I'd say right now we're in sort of early adolescence at best.
But do we grow?
You know, I'd like to think so. And I think if you look at it in the long term, like over centuries, you know, I mean, the people who were writing 2,000 years ago were just as smart as we were. They weren't tweeting about it, but they had the intelligence. But I think we do have more insight. We do have more. We certainly have more knowledge, and we're able to apply it more. And the arc is towards better intelligence and better rationality. But it's with a lot of stop and go and back and forth and up and down in between. It's surely not a straight line.
How does this affect a psychiatrist? I mean, knowing so much of this, do you... Because, I mean, the more I learn about psych, and I've had some, you know, more than one session with certain counselors. Okay. But the more I learn, the more I'm able to work it out, by utilizing those things. And you'll find that it really doesn't end. There's never one moment where you're just all right now and everything's gone. You literally
have to work
at this stuff. Yes. And, that's the great thing about doing drama and writing drama is that, you know, you're making what, you know, you're making life work.
You know, after Ordinary People came out, I always thought if I put on a sweater and said the right thing, everything would be fine. But that's never worked. But no, realistically and without getting technical, what you have to do is evaluate where someone is at and then sort of meet them where they're at and try to move them forward. You know, some people you can just gently confront, like, do you see what you're doing? And when it's pointed out, they'll catch it. Other people, you could do that all day and it will go in one ear and out the other, and you have to much more gradually move them along. Some people aren't going to move along at all, and it's basically harm reduction to just say, like, you know, if you do that, these are probably going to be the consequences. So it's really evaluating who you're working with and taking them along as within their capability.
I try to, I often joke with people because I'm alone a lot, and I joke with people and I say, well, I'm never really alone because there's always at least, you know, four or five imaginary shrinks walking with me. And wherever I do and wherever I go, they're constantly saying, and I found myself in my I don't want to say later years, but certainly I'm happy to have lived this long. But I'm, you know, I find myself doing something, when I'm with someone or even when I'm alone. I mean, it doesn't necessarily, and I go, oh, Dave, that's my mother.
That's my mother. It's important. And I tell people when we talk about these things, although, you know, a lot of people are not comfortable talking about this stuff because they immediately think you're just, you know, you're judging them or what have you, you know?
Yeah.
But I tell them my experiences because I think, well, maybe that'll rub off on some people because I'm not, I can't tell them what to do or what have you, but it's true. And it really works because,
absolutely,
you know?
If you ever think you're going to get totally past that, forget about it.
Right.
The key is doing exactly what you described, is recognizing it and then taking a step back and say, well, let me rethink that.
Yes.
You know, maybe that wasn't the best way to react because it's really reflecting this old issue or this old way of thinking. So the key is that you never get beyond falling into those traps. It's being able to catch yourself before you get into deep doo-doo.
Deep doo-doo. You said you weren't going to get technical.
Well,
yeah. The deep doo-doo. That also goes for good things, though, doesn't it? Because there are good things that we take with us, and we want to hold on to them, and we want them to work in our benefit. At the same time, we want to be able to stop in its tracks something that's going to be self-destructive or just self-destructive. Because
and also realizing what was good in the past may not fit the current society or the current situation.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, it may have been something you learned that was really very useful at that point in life or for that person's life, but may need some modification now, and it's a matter of catching yourself and revising it.
How would you just give us a very simple description? You probably know how to do this of reality. Like, hey, what? Suppose you feel something, you stop. You say, "Go, is that real? What is reality to anybody?"
If I knew, I'd get a Nobel Prize. But the way I put it is, you know, we can look at things at a spiritual level. We could look at things at a quantum mechanic level. But then you have to look things at a practical level. And one of the examples I use is, you know, if you study particle physics, everything is really mostly empty space,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like the distance between subatomic particles is huge. On the other hand, if I'm in a street and there's a semi coming at me, get out of the effing way.
You know, it's funny. It's
empty space or not.
If someone is running across a like 6-lane highway, right?
Yeah.
Just trying to get to the other side, decides to run across, is hit. Yeah. Right? We won't say that's bad luck. Right, because you know, most people would go, "What did he expect?" You know, it's like, how did he thinking? They assess that particular reality, and yet if it's just like one road and a car comes and cars are coming and the guy calculates it, he runs across, and then they say like, "Well, that's like, he could have been hit, but he wasn't. He was lucky. Yeah. He was lucky." Yeah. People can see things. What I'm saying is, people can see things and judge that reality perfectly in that situation. But then when it gets close to them, that's when the feelings start.
When the feelings kick in and when they lose track. And that's where really, I mean, very honestly, I learned as much at the racetrack as I did in medical school. Because you can analyze a race up the kazoo, but if you don't take into account that things are not always predictable and may go in different ways, and that as much as you predict, you have to take chance and whether you want to call it luck or just randomness into account, you're never going to understand the reality of life. Because, you know, we're not a mechanical system. We're actually a very chaotic system. The world is a chaotic system. People are chaotic systems. And there's a mathematics to chaos,
but
it's not the simple, you know, equations or schemes that we like to think it is. And they're good approximations. I mean, you know as well as I, you could look through the racing form and, you know, make all your calculations and you'll do a lot better than betting randomly. But unless you bring to it a knowledge that things aren't always going to happen the way they're supposed to, you're not going to do as well as you should.
That would probably be the case with lots of areas. Are people aware? I mean, doctors, sir, you're a doctor, but I mean, surgeons, are aware. And they even, you know, doctors don't give, don't use odds, because odds is a, you know, that's a gaming type evaluation. But they, you know, they'll say things like, well, you know, the 30% chance you'll get pancreatitis, there's,
And, you know, you're only one person, so, you know.
But you know, when that, but I always do this, I always look at that and I go, to third, that's a 5-2 that I'm gonna get. And I look at it that way. Someone once gave me, said there's a they can really get particular too, says, you know, there's a 14% chance. With this endoscopy, you know, you're going to get pancreatitis. I went, that's like, those are good odds.
Very seriously, that's one of my big peeves with the medical system right now, and particularly the insurance companies, is because, yes, you can state those odds, and we have good ways of sort of coming to an approximation of those odds. But then the insurance companies want us to treat people based as if everybody is going to act like the average person. And no, only a small percentage will work as the average. You have a lot of outliers. And if you don't take that into account, if you treat everyone based on what's best on average, you're going to be mistreating 60% of the people you treat.
That's working in volume. And that would be the same with almost anything else too, right?
Yeah, because 30% on each side are going to be over responders or other under responders, and you have to take that into consideration and do things differently. If you do what the insurances want you to do and just do what's best for that middle 40% within the middle standard deviation, you're missing 60% of the people.
Dr. David Reese is with us. You know, I have this, there's this, you know, I've had that mental block with your name as ever since I met you.
You got it right.
Yeah. But I had to do an association. There's this guy, there's this actor, wonderful actor who's on the show now and then. His name, and I keep saying Kenneth Walsh. It's Kenneth Welsh. It's Welsh. Okay. It's, and I could, I kept saying Walsh and he'd get Welsh. He'd go Welsh. And I literally had to say, well, you know, we love your family's jelly.
Right. Well, you know,
I was never wrong again.
I'm meeting new patients in the hospital, it's very easy. They, what's your name? And they'll see the spelling. You know, it's Reese's Pieces.
Yeah,
they know me the next day.
But I got to play these games with myself. And this is not, and you know, before when I joked about age, it's not age. Yeah. None of this stuff is age, because I remember having these particular problems when I was, you know, an adolescent.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know. I'm telling everyone here, Dr. Reese's Pieces is with, that's insulting. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have
said.
Dr. Reese is with us. And,
I take my work seriously. I don't take myself seriously.
Good. Good for you. I'm telling people to write things down when you're here so that they can remember and look into it. You still haven't written a big book or a little book or anything, have you?
Well, actually, I have a chapter in a book that's now on the New York Times bestseller.
Really? Tell us about it. Let's get weird.
Well, now this is getting into politics, and I don't want to alienate anyone, but I do have a chapter in the book that's titled The Dangerous Case of Donald Trump.
Cool. What's the name of the book?
Chapter 8, and we're on the bestseller list right now. It was just put out
in what book is this?
Ago. The Dangerous Case of Trump is the name of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's 27 psychiatrists comment. We don't always all agree on everything, but it's pretty consistent. And my chapter is, I think, pretty benign, but it's out there. Otherwise, I don't have anything published, but I'm always on Twitter for better or worse.
Yes, you are.
Honestly, never partisan until recently. I always, everything I did was sports and clinical. These days it's more political. But I'm on Twitter as DMR Dynamics, and feel free to contact me or, you know, send me a note or whatever.
why did this particular political situation, when did it hit you? When did it suddenly affect you or push whatever button you had?
Right. Well, it really goes to right what we're talking about, because it's not really partisan in terms of policy. I'm going to have my agreements, disagreements, but that's sort of personal, and it's not left or right. It's that, just to get political for a second, I mean, we have a president who's basically thinks based on what feels good to him at the moment. And I think that's dangerous.
And it's 14. What year, what age is that?
Well, I mean, actually, you know, he's probably, when he's functioning like that, when you listen to his talking and it's all just emotion, it's really at a schoolyard level. And whether you agree with his specific policies or not, it's a dangerous way of thinking.
You know, what gets me about that is even, as early as today, yeah. I heard, someone, talking on one of the news shows, and they said that they had talked to most of the people who were very strong, Trump supporters.
Yeah.
And they didn't mind at all how he talks and what he says in his tweets or when he contradicts himself. They just like the fact that he speaks out. Now, that's a little weird because you could admire someone for speaking out, but you know, but so they're having a connection with that.
And I could see that to one extent, but what really worries me is if that's his thought process during a crisis, we're screwed.
Yeah, but it also worries me that there's so many people who identify with that. Doesn't that bother you? That bothers me.
Oh, yeah, very much so. You know, I was looking back yesterday to a paper I wrote in 2009 about what I saw going wrong in our political system, and I'm not going to say that I predicted exactly this. But I actually talked about that this is the way we were going towards less and less rationality and more everything based on emotion and playing to the spin and that it was potentially dangerous, whether it be from the left or from the right. And, you know, I'm sorry I didn't publish that back in 2009. I gave a couple of talks on it, but never published it. And, it worries me very much. And, you know, I would say about, roughly 20 to 30% of the population, and that covers all political spectrums, are really functioning on that level of immaturity.
Well, wow. How does that compare? Do you know? You might, sure, because you read all this stuff. How does that compare with other cultures?
You know, my best guess is it's pretty close, although I can't say I have expertise, but I think where it affects our system more is that because our political system just happens to be so split down the middle, you know, you look at the last couple elections and they were all been decided really very close in terms of the popular vote. So that who's the deciding vote? The deciding vote are the people who are making their decision at the last moment based on emotion. So that the people who've decided rationally made their decision long before. But in the last month or two of the campaign, all the ads, both sides, everything are aimed emotionally at the people who they're going to get to react without thinking. And that drains the whole system down to that level.
What about, just going to point right to Steve Bannon.
Yeah.
What do you read from that? Because I look at that guy and I go like, what is this? Is this just his game at this point in his life or what? How can anybody be so devoted, to that? What's going on with him that you can see that is not, you know, another person who is rich or whatever?
You know, I don't know enough about his personal background or anything to speculate. And, you know, I don't want to diagnose from a distance. Yeah. But you look at it and you look at his background, you know, in Wall Street, you look at his background in films, you look at where he is now, something's going haywire. Now, I can't say what it is and I'm not going to put a diagnosis on it, but something ain't right.
And a lot of people see it and, I mean, get a feeling, about that. There's a great, one of the guys who was on, one of the actors who was on my show said, I love this description of him. I'm going to pass it on to you and you can pass it on.
Yeah.
Steve Bannon. He looks like the best looking guy in the liquor store.
Right. Right. I have no idea. Does he sort of foster that image? Does he sort of like that image for some reason?
I think he's wallowing.
Is that who he really is?
Doesn't he seem to be wallowing? Yeah, he does seem to be wallowing in it. You know, I'm going to tell you how he made one thing he was connected to that made him a fortune.
Yeah.
the syndication of Seinfeld.
Right.
You know about that, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
This guy got all his money, and then he's now he's being backed by these Mercer guy, the Mercers, or whatever.
Right. And you say, how did he get from here to there? And like, you know, there's a black hole in there somewhere that I surely don't. I mean, I don't have enough information to speculate how he got from here to there. But
doesn't he provoke a feeling? Right? Doesn't he?
Well, terror.
Yeah. I mean, so there are certain people whose very presence, even though we don't see them. So you're right. I mean, we're not with them. We don't know any other part of them. You know, we don't know how they tell a joke or whatever or what they like, but we see these people and we're, some of them though, we're really getting down, in other words, is there anything more to Mr. Trump than you think we know? What do you think happened to him as a kid?
Yeah, again, I think there's a lot we don't know, and I don't like speculating on that because I don't know.
Sure.
But what I do know is where he's at now. And initially, just to go back, I was wondering if he was pulling an Andy Kaufman.
Ooh.
I was wondering if it was an all an act. Now, the more I've seen, the less I think that's a likelihood. I think what you see is what you get at this point. But you know, you look back even to his old tapes. Let's put it this way. Yeah, he never was the most mature.
Right, you know? Right.
I mean, he may have been a bit sharper in terms of his wording, but some of that may have been scripted and he wasn't under as much stress. Who knows? But, you know, I mean, you can't say this person ever really functioned at a mature level that we know of.
That's,
at least mature in terms of ethical, solid, et cetera.
We learned of all the psychological problems that Nixon had as time went on. Who knew what was going on with him?
Right,
what's his name's movie? How could I forget his name? We were talking about conspiracies and stuff.
Oliver Stone. Yeah, yeah.
His movie really went into a lot of that stuff going on with him, his mother, his brother,
and all that
stuff. And all this is all stuff that is part of our culture now. For instance, could they have made the story of Ray Charles, you know, like 20 years ago? I don't think so. I don't think they would have, you know, the whole thing about going blind. And I mean, we have in a certain way, a lot of people have gotten who are scribing histories and things are getting more into it.
We have more sophistication.
Yeah.
And there have been people who've been looking at this in the past, but it hasn't been as much in the common domain. And, you know, I mean, you can make an argument that people have that you have to be crazy to want to be president. But there's a difference between being narcissistic and being narcissistically dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, there's a spectrum in between, but.
So why aren't there, is it just the system because of the way the system worked and because 77,000 people decided to go one way instead of another for whatever cultural reason, and he became president, did that. The system did that.
Yeah, and I think there have been a lot of factors that have played into that. Some of that is just the natural course of, you know, you look through history, through any system tends to deteriorate over time.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of it is technology, which has been absolutely wonderful in some ways and absolutely destructive in some ways. And, you know, what used to be buried on page 16 of the newspaper that we probably never look at now gets tweeted worldwide in milliseconds and we're all aware of it. So it's a totally different ball game and everyone's opinion is out there and, you know, it's a very different world we're in.
That's hard. That really turns me, sideways, but people seem to think that so many other people care what they think or they just have to say it. What's going on with somebody? Do they not express themselves well enough in general? I mean, of course, we're doing general here. Generally,
everybody's different.
Yeah,
but you know, you look at people, you know, some people who I see, whether it be on Facebook, which I don't use that much anymore because I don't do my political stuff there, but Twitter or even Instagram. And you wonder about people who, you know, every day they're posting a selfie, you know, I'm really not interested.
Yeah.
Send me a picture of them every day. Why would they think anyone is?
I don't know. If you're, especially if you're just a, you know, a person. I mean, you're just a regular person. You're not a celebrity, is what I'm saying. In any.
No one's going to want to see a picture of me every day. I don't want to see a picture
exactly.
of me every day.
Oh, exactly. God. Exactly. And certain people love to show you what they eat.
Right. And it's all becomes very important, and then you get comments on it. It's a very different, and you know, the other thing, I'm just, once we're going out in these directions, the other thing is the number of choices we have these days.
Mm-hmm.
It's overwhelming. You know, when I was a kid, it just probably goes back before you were a kid.
I don't know.
But, you know, if I wanted to listen to music, and this was in New York City, I grew up in the Bronx,
mm-hmm.
I had basically three AM radio stations.
Right.
If I had good reception, maybe I could get one FM. And I had three or four albums at home that I'd have to pull out my Victrola to listen to.
Victrola. You said Victrola. I love it.
Now, you pick up your phone and you have access to every musical piece in history. So
yes.
On one hand, it's wonderful, but on the other hand, you're overwhelmed by all, by the choices you have to make.
I always
what do I listen to?
Yeah. I'm always telling younger people who I happen to deal with here and there, and I say, if you really want to use this thing, you've got to realize that you have on you, you know, an encyclopedia, you have on you something that, you know, you could find that, you could find the roots of anything. You could learn so much more than we did because
right.
we...
But we're looking at cats.
Yeah. Well, you know, America's, you know, funniest video where everybody sits and watch people falling and hurting themselves.
Right.
And that's
right.
like, because I don't know. I'm always fascinated with what, when people are giving, you know, the old thing about opinions are like elbows. I said elbows. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
We all have them. But for some reason or another, this is really fueled, people's need to say, well, you know what I think. Right.
It's changed interactions. Like not this past summer of 17, the summer of 16, I actually worked back in New York City for the first time in many years. And I was staying in an apartment in a building that was mostly millennials.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 35-story building or something. And, you know, in the elevator, everybody was on their phone. Now, they were communicating with someone. They were usually texting, but totally ignoring the person next to them. Now, I thought, well, I'm an old geezer and this 25-year-old person isn't going to pay. But they were ignoring each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there was, so yes, they were communicating and there were much more communication. When I was a kid, I'd have to find the phone and call someone and sit by the phone. But on the other hand, you're ignoring the person next to you. So it's a just totally different way of being.
Yeah, I think it's telling them how, I mean, using it, sure, it's misused. There's no doubt about it. And to really use it. You know, they do really use it when they need to.
Oh yeah, no, it's wonderful.
You know, but, and they still probably need to use it more, in their particular, you know, as they're growing in their particular field or getting communications with other people. And I tell millennials, what it was like, you know, I had to go to a place they call a library and I had to go there. I had to physically go there and then I had to look for a book.
Right, and I hope no one else had taken it out the week before.
Yeah, and I had to read, find the thing and read it. I couldn't just, you know, there was a lot of effort. And it seems like now that it's all available, and they don't put in the simple effort to really appreciate it as much, you know?
Right. I mean, there's so much more data available, and a lot of people do make use of it and make use of it well.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, it can be very misleading. You know, the fact checking isn't always there. The accuracy isn't. And there's a lot of crap out there that now it's hard to distinguish the snake oil from the real stuff.
How do you think, feelings describing, reality fits into the whole digital social network thing?
It's so easy with the social network to keep yourself in a bubble of what makes you feel that you're right and makes you feel good about what you think. And never be challenged.
People search for the things that will that will justify how they feel, right? Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, exactly. And it just reinforces that. And really, you know, people can avoid being challenged to think differently or to see another point of view, or it immediately gets so snarky or hostile that you get defensive. You know, I mean, how often now do you see, I mean, let's not even get to the political debates,
right,
but just in any point, do you see a debate where people are really discussing issues based on merits as opposed to it being cults of personality, mm-hmm, or just who feels better about what?
Is this because in a sense man is a herd animal in a way? I mean, are you looking for people to justify other people that share feelings and whatever it is, perspectives, so that you feel you're okay? Is it that guy?
Right. No, that's very much part of it. You know, the whole thing of gaslighting where, you know, if everybody's doing one thing and you're seeing something else, you start wondering if you're the crazy one. And sometimes you may be, but sometimes you may not be. But it's awfully difficult to say, you know, I'm going to stand up for what I think because I think there's data behind it when everybody else is going in a different direction. And sometimes you may be wrong, but it's hard to even take that stance of saying I'm going to think for myself rather than going with what so many experts or pseudo experts tell me I should feel or think.
And when there wasn't digital technology, these same challenges existed. Of course, right?
Of course it existed, and there was plenty of snake oil out there. But as you say, you could go to a library, you could look up things. Publishers were more, you know, they took more effort in terms of what they published. You know, they threw out a lot of trash. Now trash is a big industry because it's exciting and it sells. So, yeah, it's always been an issue, and there's always been bad stuff out there, and there's always been evil out there. But it's just like more of the Wild West right now.
Well, I bring that up because if I throw out all the social media and I go back to my adolescence or when I was developing in terms of being, you know, an adult, I find that without the social media, the same thing was going on. So in other words, there were kids who, no, I mean, even then they didn't look any further than what their parents taught them, or
sure,
right, and that it was, so it would be difficult to be different, or it would be you wanted to be accepted in this crowd or that crowd.
Sure.
So those emotions, are you saying that they're more intense? Are you saying they're more intense than they were when this stuff, which was just human nature, happened anyway?
I think human nature hasn't really changed, but there are more powerful forces encouraging the negative parts of it and discouraging maturity.
That's profound.
But the basics of human nature and the basics of the process of maturing are the same, but it's more of a challenge to get there. Now, there were other obstacles in those days, and I'm not saying everything was wonderful then by any means, but there are very different, powerful obstacles now that we didn't have to face. Well, there's some of the obstacles we did have to face aren't there now.
Yeah, that's the area of sophistication that we were talking about.
Yeah.
And yet, you're right. And yet, it's people are still just people. And stuff is going on.
And that hasn't really, you know, if you really look at it, changes in human nature occur on an evolutionary basis over thousands of years, or at best hundreds of years. You know, we're not that much more intelligent than the hunter-gatherers.
Mm-hmm.
We just have a lot more technology, and society has moved us in a different way in terms of dealing with it. And some things have been lost, some things have been gained. Right now we're in a regressed period, but hopefully we'll move back to progress sometime. But I ain't holding my breath.
Wow, you don't have Dr. David Reese is with us, and you know you want this conversation to end well, you know, but you have a there's still something going on.
Well, let's put it this way:
what
the one thing that's stable, the one thing that we can always count on, and the one thing I will always go back to,
mm-hmm,
a 3-to-1 shot's going to pay between $8 and $9. And no matter what the society is, no matter what social media is, no matter who's president, if I bet a 7-to-2 shot, I'll probably get back 920.
It's a great analogy too, because, we are playing against one another. That's what parimutuel means, of course, right? And we're playing against one another. We're, and in order to, it's actually it could be some kind of a metaphor. In order to make money, we have to go against the crowd.
True.
This is a great, right?
I mean, what does the good gambler do? He doesn't look for necessarily the best, most likely bet. He looks for the under bet.
Yes. He looks for how the crowd has gone wrong.
Look for the best odds. People. You know, the compared to the real odds, as opposed to who's most likely, you know, if you bet who's most likely to win, you're going to end up losing in the long run because you get short odds.
And that as a metaphor in terms of going with everybody to feel comfortable, because even though the chance is greater, you will win that particular moment. Right.
You may win more races, but you're going to be out of cash by the end of the night.
End of the night, the end. Some people have gone to, their lives have been thrown away based on that. But that's a very visceral, I mean, there's so much emotion involved in any kind of risk, though, right?
Yes. Yeah. And we're not really good at risks, because if you look at it, our bodies, our minds are tuned to look for immediate risk, to look to risk to life and limb. It takes a lot of training, really, to look at other risks objectively, because our first reaction is fight or flight, immediate sense of risk. And there, you want to make a quick decision. You don't want, if someone's coming at me with a knife, I don't want to do a study on knives. On the other hand, most of what we do isn't that immediate, but a lot of times we apply that kind of immediate reaction, which has its place. Mm-hmm. But also can be misplaced.
And you can win with a knife in a gunfight.
Oh, yeah.
People don't realize that. It's not a matter of how quickly you think. But what about in this day and age, what's the worst? Well, I don't know how much you say worst, to study this or what have you, but what is the biggest burden that younger people people going into adulthood now with all of this, with whatever they do that's frivolous with social media or whatever they do this, what's the worst thing that the most common bad, I don't want to say worst, but what's the most common thing that is not beneficial to any of them?
Yeah, I would say that the biggest danger in general, and I don't mean immediate danger, but exactly what you're talking about, is staying in a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
It's just looking for what supports what you think, not challenging yourself, not challenging your thoughts, not looking at other points of view. And you may look at the other point of the view and it may confirm that you were right, but not challenging yourself and only looking for what will make you feel good about where you are, which means you're never going to grow.
How much of that is inherited in terms of parents and immediate figures, when you're growing? In other words, people who do that are obviously feeling okay doing that, right?
That's right. And a lot of it is trained. A lot of it is experience. And a whole different area that I won't get into is that people who suffer different types of deprivation or abuse during their early years have to learn how to focus on survival first and don't have time, legitimately don't have time and shouldn't take the time to look at these more sophisticated ways of thinking about things because it's dangerous to do so. So, there are a lot of social, socioeconomic, sociopolitical factors, as well as just learning and, being exposed to education that come into play. So you can take the person who has all the right intellect, genes, whatever, and they can turn out totally effed up, in the wrong situation. Or you can take someone who's really limited, but, put them in the right situation and protect them from certain traumas and they can end up doing a lot better. So yeah, there's a lot of luck involved and there's a lot of society and involved. It's not just a simple system.
risk is in, that's a matter of risk too, though, right? You
suddenly, absolutely.
You know, you suddenly, absolutely. Challenging yourself is risky because you may find out you're a different person and you're not, and you don't really want to be a different person because you're comfortable in all the mess right. that you, the right. weight, right?
Right.
People like the baggage they carry, right? Some people like the baggage they carry.
Some people like it. And let's even take a school situation. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're in a situation that's very much cliques or gangs or whatever, then there isn't a lot of motivation to challenge yourself. You want to stay with your safe group that's going to protect your back. You know, on the other hand, if you're in a more open situation where you don't have to worry that much about, well, if I step out of line, you know, it's going to make a lot of enemies, you have more freedom to explore. So some of it, you know, and it's wise not to challenge someone who's going to beat the crap out of you. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of it really is social, and that really skews how much people can learn in certain situations.
So let's look at the mass consciousness now and, in a sense, get back to politics only for this reason, because yeah. we're talking about, you know, you and me were 50 years ago or whatever, and now, and the differences.
Yeah.
Okay, what makes... what makes popular, or what does it actually mean to make America great again?
You know, I think to me personally, that whole idea misses the point, because if you're not always growing, if you're looking towards the past, something's wrong. So I don't care how great we were or weren't, the goal should be, let's be better. You know, to say, let's go back to the way it was. Too much has happened between then and now to just go back to the way it was, good or bad.
This is the threatening. This is the big threat, though. And this is why this is touching those particular parts of groups of people, right, who feel like that progress, everything that's happened that has changed from their development is threatening.
Right.
Is threatening to them, right?
So. And there may be good reasons for that, and there may be things that were better in the past, but that doesn't mean we can go back to it the way it was. We need to go forward to maybe recapture some of the things that we were doing better in the past, but we're not going to do it the same way.
And what kind
of... And if we try to do it the same way, it's not going to work.
What kind of mind, or what kind of person, or what kind of emotion allows somebody to believe what they would believe in that, as if it's like, what are we going to get rid? What are we going to rid of this society or what have you that will bring us back to,
right.
I mean, the very thought of it seems absurd, doesn't it? It's like, how can we do that?
Well, it is, but it, you know, if you look at it, it's what we were trained. What's the biggest lie ever told to kids? The end of fairy tales, and so they lived happily ever after.
Yeah.
Now, who the hell have you ever met who's lived happily ever after? But basically, we all carry that with us, that if we meet the right person, if we form the right group, if we connect with the right political party, then we will live happily ever after. And once we tie into that fantasy, which we all carry to some extent, mm-hmm. we're lost. Because the reality is, let's figure out where we have to go on the future, put on our boots, and wade through the crap the best we can. But if you're looking to, which we all are to some extent, and some people have never let go of, living happily ever after, you're going to be lost. And I would say that's the biggest fallacy, and that's what really causes cults. What do cults offer? They offer, join our cult, and you will live happily ever after.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's bullshit.
Yeah. And I guess I don't know how to do this, and maybe we can't do this, but there are people now who are, they're not living now if they believe that they can get somebody who's going to reverse, going
right.
to get rid
right.
of this, that, and the other thing. And right. I mean, in a sense, isn't that like, there's something very, obviously, I don't know if it's fascist or what, but to say that, I mean, in other words, I don't think people are even thinking like this. That's what drives me nuts. It's like,
it's a cult. It's a cult mentality. It's just as logical as saying, well, you know, if we take it to the racetrack analogy, well, I'm going to, you know, it's the fifth race is coming up, but I'm going to go back and rebet the third. No, you're not, and no one's going to take your bet. You know, and if you bet based on the third, you ain't going to hit the fifth.
Now, you of course, have dealt with people, football people and everything, right?
Yeah.
A lot of sports, professional sports guys, okay?
Yeah.
And we look at the difference. This is a... I was watching, and I don't watch, I really don't follow sports anymore for reasons that I could do a whole show on, but it doesn't matter. But I turned on, I happened to pass by the World Series last night on TV, right?
Yeah.
And this guy was up, and he was a Dodger, and he's up at bat, all right?
Yeah.
And then he's gonna go into a song. He's like, he's gonna sing, "I Am a Man from Constant Sorrow."
Yeah, yeah,
he's got red hair coming out in his beard, and I'm like, to me, you know, I look at that, and it's not like I want everyone to look like Mickey Mantle. It doesn't matter. But point is, but when I see it, I go, this is a cartoon, and yet it's professional. He's, you know, he's playing baseball, so it's like I have to accept the fact.
and for where things are today, you know, I mean, there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, and. Actually, if you look at something like baseball, which I don't really follow very intentionally right now, but I've watched a couple of the playoff games, you know, so much of that is really needing to react quickly that people have both rational and irrational ways of doing it. Because if you look at it scientifically, you know, the batter has a tenth of a second from the time the ball leaves the pitcher's hand to when he has to make a decision whether to swing or not.
Yeah, it's a fascinating...
What's happening in that tenth of a second includes knowledge, experience, but then so many players will bring to it ideas of luck, ideas of superstition.
Yes, right.
Because they know they don't have time to think. So they'll rely on all these other things, some of which are really based on experience and training, and some of which are just cockeyed.
Yeah.
But it makes them feel better, and if it makes them feel more secure, in some ways it's actually helpful, but in some ways it's deluding yourself.
Isn't that where we've come down to, though? You're saying all of this, that makes them feel secure.
Right.
You know the guy, what's the name of the first guy who started all the stuff with the...
Kaepernick.
That guy, yeah. You know, when I saw him, when they did that and they showed him, and they're making, a political, whoever, that suddenly bringing up this topic that everybody wants to yell about or whatever, again, it's just one more thing where they could, you know, you could jump in the ring and start punching the other person. But, you know, I looked at him, all I thought about was, how does he get a helmet on that head? And I'm going, where am I?
But on the other hand, it might really protect against concussions.
I know, but I'm saying, like, well, and I stop and I go, who is that? Where did that come from? That I look, everyone's looking at it and go, what a shame. And someone's taken a side and someone's got pride and someone cares. It's like, I just want to know, I want to watch him put on, how does he do that?
When you look at, you know, so much is projected onto it because, you know, he had his reasons for doing it. And now it's taken on so many reasons that had nothing to do with what was in his mind to begin with. And it's just gone all over the place for good reasons, for bad reasons. And that's pretty typical of everything these days.
And that was one of our president's moments of, what was that? I mean, this is really what was on his mind? Is that what really is, like, that's what I'm thinking. I'm going, I know it's crazy that I think, how does he put on his helmet? But is this really what's on your mind? You're the president. What is that all about?
Why does he even care? Why does it make that much difference? Or is it because when he started WFL, you know, he got run out and lost a couple $1 million and he's still angry about it. Who the hell knows what's really on
his
mind?
Who
knows?
That would be something right there. Do you remember a movie, Godfrey Cambridge? You remember Godfrey Cambridge, an actor?
Yeah.
There's a movie now I'm forgetting the other guy's name. The man who played Derek Flint in Like Flint. Wow, how did I forget? I saw him the other day. He was in another movie. Anyway, it's called The President's Analyst. Did you ever see?
Oh, right. Yeah, I don't know if I ever saw it, but I remember the movie. Yeah.
And it just touches upon those, not the greatest movie, but I mean, it touches upon those things, like the president's having like a major, not attack or whatever, but you really have to handle how he's thinking right now, quick. And he keeps calling up. He's going, I'm in this thought. I don't know. You know, it really doesn't, you gotta know what I'm thinking and why. There was a movie I saw recently. I don't know if you've ever seen this. 1959 or 58.
Yeah.
It's called Pressure Point.
I remember the name, but I don't remember the
Sidney
movie.
Sidney Poitier.
Yeah.
Is a prison psychiatrist.
Hmm.
If you've never seen this, go watch it somewhere. There's got to be, on somewhere.
Yeah.
He's a prison psychiatrist, and this is made in 59. So the issues of color and everything come up.
Right.
But the guy that he's put in charge of handling is played by Bobby Darin.
Huh, no kidding. Who went to my high school?
In Bronx, yeah. And he's just brilliant. He was a really good actor, Bobby Darin.
Yeah.
And this has to do with, I think everyone should like watch this because it has to do with a kid who's mistreated and abused.
Right.
And
right.
how that affects not just his behavior, because this is an extreme case.
Right.
But they're all based on the feelings and how he looks for ways to make that, to justify those feelings.
Right, right.
And it turns into very bad things, and he winds up, in jail. And the problems, and how he uses color.
Yeah.
The psychiatrist is black. He uses color. And, it's brought up again to me, how much we all need to pay attention to where these emotions, originate.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's much more complex than we give credit for. And you go back to the 50s, we thought we had easy answers psychiatrically, which we don't. It's much more complex than that. But just because it's complex doesn't mean you should ignore it. You do your best to sort it out.
Do you find that people still have, some people still have a reticence, to deal with, someone like you? In your profession?
Very much.
Because it's like, hey, I'm not crazy.
It's encouraged also by the pharmaceutical industry, which basically puts out the message that there's a medication that will make everything better. There's a place for medication. I prescribe, conservatively, but I prescribe. But, medication doesn't solve personal problems. Too many people these days are just looking for a quick fix or something to make them feel better rather than to solve the problem. Basically, I want to feel better about my life being crap instead of making my life better.
But your profession
that doesn't go very far.
But your profession has become a bit more sophisticated in its reputation anyway, because there can't be as many people as there used to be when America was great back in the And people used to say like, well, maybe you should talk to someone. That immediately hit someone's like, why? I'm crazy?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, there's definitely less stigma in seeking help, but unfortunately the help is often more superficial or just pharmacological. And it's both sides. There's less stigma. More people are willing to go for help, but a lot of people are getting lousy help.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. So your profession has its,
we got our problems.
I was looking for a quick name there. This is a Cotolo Chronicles, and we're chronicling. Cotolo himself is chronicling. Remember, this is not Chronicles of Cotolos. It's not about me. This is about you, listeners. This is Cotolo Chronicles. I keep telling people it's a sentence. This is what Cotolo does. He chronicles. And Dr. David Reese has so much experience in this stuff. I'm absolutely always – I got a lot of doctors on the – I mean professors and doctors and scientists on the show. And I guess I treat them differently than I treat – artists, and because I have so much more respect for people who go through the amount of work and study and time that you have to do, because I wasn't brought up that. I mean, because I know where I came from, and that just was not going to happen. You know, you guys, you guys and gals who do this are I'm just in awe of how you can do it, and how much I learn from people who are smarter than me, and that, and becoming less and less people. is that okay? I say that as I get older.
It's like, absolutely, you know, like, absolutely.
As I feel like, you know, there's a point where I think along in the on the drawbridge. No, it's not drawbridge. All those bridges they have that in those jungle movies, you know, that wobble. What do you call those bridges? The ones that just go off.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
You know, if that's life, you know, along the way, I always run into somebody. I feel like I'm going to run into somebody who's not going to like shake it and say, someone's going to go, oh, I can help you get off of this thing now. It's like, you know, it's like, wow. Yeah. Or I can help better than that. I can help you walk this path more easily.
And you know, let me just end it with this. You know, there are people who, you know, may not be as intellectually smart as I in some ways, but who I learn from all the time. And there are people who are a lot smarter than I am, who I don't want to listen to anything they say.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, question everything, question yourself, look for the real information, have a critical eye, and do the best you can.
And what else? Do you have anything in the wait, I know you're probably gone. I don't want to keep you any longer. That's because you're a busy guy.
Yeah.
And you got to get, what time's your flight?
Actually, I have a red eye out tomorrow night, so packing here. Yeah. As I say, there's the one book that I just contributed to that's on the bestseller list right now, but I have a couple things in the work that hopefully I'll be announcing before the end of the year.
When you do, make sure I know it, or come on, we'll help you promote it. We'll make sure that people know about it. And, you know, we'll stay in touch. Have you talked to Dusty lately?
I talked to him a couple weeks ago. We stay in contact now and then.
I got to get back in touch with Dusty.
But I'd like to really thank you. I appreciate it. It's always fun. And
I have to thank you, because there's absolutely no reason but your professionalism and your and devotion to mankind that you would even come on this show.
Oh, my pleasure, and really, anytime.
Thank you. Have a great, safe trip, and we'll talk with you, and, you know.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Rice.
Reese. Take care.
Reese.
Reese.
Good night.
Good night.
Yeah, Dr. Reese's. No, it's not Reese's Pieces. Sorry. Dr. Reese. Dr. David Reese. Look him up. And you can follow him on, and ask him things. I mean, this stuff's expensive for people. I mean, he's not going to completely, but you can ask him things and find out what stuff you need to read or write or whatever on Twitter at, wait, I wonder, if, well, just, you could put in Dr. David Reese, REI. Yeah, I don't know why I have these blocks. REISS, and it'll come up, and they'll, because I don't know everybody's tags, you know? People have different tags, you know, the @s. Not everybody has their name. I guess that's like anything else, right? Because in social media, people make up names. But some people tell you their real, you know, you tell them your real name, and that's their account. And yet, it's like, you know, Oogie Doogie, at Oogie Doogie Boogie, or whatever. So, I don't know. I have no idea. My name is Frank Atolo. Man, his name adorns the title of the show. We have some time left. Let me tell you, in that time, as of right now. Oh, hear that? There goes that. Bad. You know what that's? That's whole wheat pasta. Okay. Whole wheat pasta. Grilled chicken. I've been trying to eat so well. That's what, I'm telling you what is that called? The other day I told somebody, I said, what is throwing up? Reversed paralysis, not paralysis. Peristalsis. No, I don't. Anyway, all right, reverse peristalsis. I believe that's it. And they said, no, it's not that.
this particular belch, let's just call it a belch, is coming from the grilled chicken, the olives and pimentos, some garlic salt, and grilled chicken. What else was in there? Wow, it was great. I had two bowls of this stuff. Terrific. Terrific. I don't like waking up, and lately because I've been trying to eat well, here's one of the problems with eating well. You eat less, and that's good because you don't want to get extra weight, which causes extra whatever, cholesterol and stuff. And this isn't just for, you know, older people. This is for younger people too. This is where all the cholesterol starts when you're younger, you know? So what I'm saying is you eat less because you're eating more healthy. So you're not eating junk because let's face it, you can't eat meals all the time. You can't even eat healthy all the time. You know, you can't live on yogurt, right? I mean, even if it's good for you or whatever. So, and even you can't live on lettuce. They can't, but here's what happens. I hate waking up in the middle of the night. And the reason I'm waking, or even early morning, because I go to bed in the middle of the night. If I wake up and I'm hungry, I realize I just woke up, not because I'm thirsty. That's easy. You get a bottle of water, keep it by my side of my bed. That's fine. But waking up and being hungry, that sucks. That really, because how do you get back to sleep? You dream of food. No, you don't necessarily dream of food. It doesn't work that way. I want to say this too, which I didn't, and that is coming up in 15 minutes. Most remarkable person returns to the microphone. If you're listening live at SRN Media Works, then he's Tom Savino's Savino Veritas is coming up. Now, if you know anyone who has another radio station, has a, you know, one of these freewheeling internet radio stations, there are still plenty of them out there, Or you should tell, write to that station person and say, hey, you know, you should run Savino Veritas. Tom Savino, who was, of course, a partner of mine in the arts many years ago and for many years. And this show, which I told him, I asked him, I said, would you like to produce a show and be on the, you know, and it's really become it's just a terrific show because all of the humor that Tom has developed over the years, much of it that influenced me. And he was a teacher, you know, he took it and put it to good use because he wasn't doing all this stuff like this junk that I have done all these years. And, you know, he's a teacher for many years. So he, the benefit, a lot of children and adolescents have the benefit of his knowledge and how he was able to turn a phrase or teach. I mean, you got a good teacher, you know, good teachers are hard to find. So, there's that. And this show is just fun and great. And it was off for a while because, as I mentioned over the weeks, and sometimes I didn't in the beginning because I was greatly concerned of Tom's health. But he has come out of it well, and he's ready to just get out there and blow it all away. He's a great producer, too. He's done stuff. And you know, in the old days, he wasn't, he didn't do that, the technical stuff. Now, he really's learned to work the Apple. Yes, he's got that. He's got that, not format, platform. He's got the Apple platform. I guess that's called Apple and IBM. And that's what they used to be called. Now it's just Microsoft and Apple. I guess that's how you do it with that. But we all started with that. We did started with Apple. I don't think that, no, the show was not on. The show was always an IBM generated thing. But, let's get Savino Veritas back into the consciousness of internet radio again. And it starts live on Thursdays, Eastern time, 11. That's when I get off here. And, so we've been going cold since, Tom was gone, but he's back, and it's gonna be great. If you want to hear past shows of Savino Veritas, of Cthulhu Chronicles, of Fabulous, the Fabulous Show, and D, and all those stuff
That there's tens of tears. That's so many shows, and Velvet Steel, and whatever else is on there. JuicedTalk.com. That's JUICED. TALK.com. And there's a, you can download so you can hear them when you want to hear them. Cause you know, we live in a society, a world, because this is like, this is a global thing, you know? That's another thing I meant to tell a doctor, but you know, we really brought it down to the least common denominator. That's fine. But you know, this whole thing, we're global. You know, you don't want to be global and yet you use Twitter and talk to people all around the world and send, like, you're global. It's over. There are no borders anymore. And there's no wall large enough, high enough. It's like the mountain they sang about. Ain't no mountain high enough. Ain't no to keep it all away and stuff. What are you going to do? And, I used to do those pauses because they're dynamic pauses. When you're talking, you don't just keep talking. And yet in the old days, I can't believe I'm saying this. I hate it saying this. In the old days of internet radio, internet broadcasting, we used to call it internet broadcasting. We called it internet radio, alternative broadcasting. Back in the days when this is all there was to it, right? Talking and playing some music and not having anybody regulating it. That was a Wild West show. Good one too. But it still is that way for those of us who maintain this. What else can I say? but I do have more to say. I want to thank the people who have been buying my book. I've noticed there's been a spike in some of the books I have for sale on Amazon because reading is important and they're cheap. And that makes sense, doesn't it? Reading is important and they're cheap. So, why not get them? If you don't like them, what have you wasted? In a day where if you smoke, it costs you what? Does it cost you $10 a pack? As my father would say, Jesus Crimmins Almighty, $10. And you can get 2, 3, 6, get 3 of my books, maybe 4 for that amount. And Amazon is there, and it's Cotolo, Frank Cotolo. You can get the books there. Also, blurb.com. A lot of people still don't mind. I hope they stay around because there's not a lot of places that can produce a product the way they do. But old Stefan Gesick has done worked with me on 2 of my books, Molotov Memoirs and More Molotov Memoirs. And his illustrations just raise the book up another level. Probably the level it needs to be raised up because the words don't. No, I mean, it's just a great compliment. I'm not the kind of guy who puts together, you know, illustrations and things. Even though Stefan Gesick has worked on many TV shows as an art director and doing art and whatever it is. If you're not an art director, what are you? You're in the art department? I don't know. Whatever it is you do. You're the artistic coordinator. I don't know. Titles, more titles. And he's done wonderful things with these books, both of these books. And I don't know one person who's read it who wants to toss it out the window or rip it up and flush it down the bowl. Do people flush things down the bowl? Anyone know? What do they do? Well, I'm talking about getting it. Of course, you can't flush the digital versions down the bowl, but they're cheaper and you can get those. All right. It's expensive to buy books these days that you actually hold in your hands and turn pages. They're expensive. Expensive to buy them, expensive to print them, believe me. So you get the digital versions of those 2 books at Blurb, Molotov Memoirs and the
sequel, I guess you could call it, more Molotov memoirs, or 3M. And we don't know. It says at the end of 3M that there's going to be another one. I forgot the name of it. A title. See that? When you talk about books, you go by titles. You know, but I know that my parents always used to say, what's the name of that movie? What's the name of that book? What's the name of that product? Always use name. Never ever said title. My mother never said title. What was the name of that movie? What's the name of that team? What's the name of that book? What's the name of that game? What's the name of that, people, of course, teacher. What's the name of that profession? What's the name of that whatever, you know? I'm hearing from Mr. Savino now. Again, I'm writing in here, getting ready, is ready to, hand it over to Mr. Savino, which is going to happen there shortly. I know he's there. I know you're there if you're listening, and I don't know if you're listening because of the delay and everything else and the fact that he has to hook on. You know, this isn't like the old days. You're not in the same studio and he just walks in. This is a whole different thing. But Thomas Savino is well and fine and raring to go. I believe that's why he's telling me he's raring to go. This is through the Skype. Oh, he is listening. Well, hello. Then you've heard me say all the things I've said. And what's the name of that? What's the name of that thing? Nobody ever says title. The title, not what's the name of Tom Savino's show? No, it's not. It's the title. It's Savino Veritas. And it's coming up. Let me ask him this, okay, if I'm gonna be a little, you're already, since you're listening there, Tom, cause if you're already, I'm gonna hit the theme, even if it's a minute earlier, is that okay with you? Cause my guest left and just rambling like this, what the heck, he's gonna come up, yes, he's already, okay, let me hit my theme and then get ready to hand you over to Mr. Savino. He's typing one more time, what's it say? It says, yes, there's the theme, it's coming up. You're only, let's say you're like 2 minutes and 2 seconds. No problemo, everybody. Stay tuned. If you're listening lifelike, I hope that station is going to play Savino Veritas. You can get it. You get it. And you know where and everything like that. My name is Frank Cotolo. Man, his name adorns the title of the show. And I shall hopefully be back next time. With more things, another guest, maybe not, who knows? We don't know. All we know is this is what we do, and that's what we do. Get the books, do the things, and we'll all be okay. Good night, Mrs. Ernstweil, wherever you may be located. See, I changed that because I didn't want to say wherever you are. So I don't want to end any sentence with R. I'm trying to practice what I preach is what I try to do. In the meantime, in this event, in all events, in this event, especially whatever it is like that we'll talk about. Thank you, Dr. Reese. Everybody go, we'll get Dr. Reese. Tom, you should have him on your show. We want to talk about politics. Holy Christmas, you listen to that and you'll find out a lot of things. Okay, there you go. I'm going to let the theme run out. Why? Because I have nothing more to say.